in here, and if people haven't heard, the power was out this morning until about noon today.
Oh, really?
And, man, we were still gonna have, we're gonna be out in the lobby, kind of, boom, bye, out there. So we didn't miss anything, but they've got it under control. Winter, well, you'll hear how it's going with everyone. I was out at the parks this weekend, because I'm up at Lake Geneva, man, with their Winter Fest, and I went out and watched a little of the bike racing at Silver Lake. And our guys did a heck of a job. They had to open up that parking lot for them and salt and get the slop out, but they had quite a few people out there. I think Franklin had a thing this weekend also that the guys were out clearing trails for. I think, did they have a walk out there?
Yeah, almost every weekend they have something. I don't know if it was a little bit higher.
Yeah, they really do a good job of the press. Franklin does. Yeah. Every paper, every article, article, they do a heck of a job of promoting. So that's all I have, just a little hearsay about people still using the parks like crazy. I think from the committee on anything. Roll call. We've got Supervisor Bilski is excused, and Supervisor Skaliski is on his way. We have Mr. Wilk here from Youth and Governance. Approval of the minutes from the previous meeting. Did everyone receive those? So we have a motion. Moved by Supervisor Juha, seconded by Supervisor Nordigan. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Citizens' comments. Any citizens that would like to address the committee on any matter pertaining to public works would have 5 minutes to do so, and all we ask if you would like to is that you give us your name and address. Any citizens' comments? Yes, sir.
I got one. I'm Jonathan Blickman. I live at 35611 8 9th Street. I've never worked with Clement before. Highway up is right at my property, and I'd just like to get a detailed update on what's happening with that part of the project. I know they're starting to do some utility work around my house now and moving gas facilities, and it has been quite an update since the fall, and just like to know where the project is at, what the updates are to that, and when it's gonna start moving forward. So.
Well, it's moving forward right now, but I'll let Ray, if you want to, like a 2 minute update.
Yeah. Generally, because we've been doing right-of-way acquisitions, and that is more paperwork than actually physical activities on the field, so it seemed as if nothing was going on. We just recently completed all the right-of-way acquisitions. That's why you're seeing the utility workers trying to relocate their properties, their utility facilities. The project is scheduled, because it has a federal fund in it, so the schedule is actually controlled by the DOT. And so it will be advertised in March. I think bid opening is around the 14th of April. Okay. So the construction is expected to start spring or early summer of this year.
Now, is there certain phases that like certain owners are going to see before other owners in this whole scope, or have you guys planned it out yet? Like, where it's going to start, where is it going to end? Or
Generally, we leave that as a prerogative for the contractor, because the contractor is supposed to provide us with a construction schedule. So based on how it's more efficient for him and more cost-effective and less impact to the residents, he's going to path his way, give us a path how he's going to construct the project. It's at that time that we'll be able to know. Right now, what happens with what we typically do is that after the project is awarded to the contractor, we usually have what they call a public information meeting, and that would be the best time to actually tell you how the project is going to impact you and the neighbors around there. And if you have concerns, you can then provide those concerns so that the contractor will take that into consideration in building up his schedule. That way, you know, the impact will be either minimized or mitigated.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
But if you sit here too, you have basically what I just told you right now on project updates.
Okay.
And we can, if you want updates, if you want Clement to send you a note when the public information meeting is. I mean, it's in the paper, but a lot of folks don't get the paper anymore. So if you want to leave him your email address, he can shoot you a note.
Yeah, it's going to be one of those meetings I know we all get, like, in the mail.
Yes,
I think we got the mail in the last meeting, which
it's going to be
a year ago November, so.
It's going to be the same way, but the only thing I just wanted to say is that the all those things will be controlled by the
contractor.
They will be managed by a consultant that's selected by the Department of Transportation. However, the county will be working very closely with the construction management team to make sure that the interests of the locals, like you or your neighbors, are being taken into serious consideration.
Okay.
Yep. With that information that eventually comes along, is that something that can go to Randall and they can just post it so then this gentleman won't have to come all the way down here in case he just, you know, hey, I haven't seen anything, you walk into Randall.
Sure.
You know, make a look. Is that something common, or is that something that
we
the
typically
ask for, or what?
We typically work with the local municipality to ensure that we publicize it as much as possible. We just recently did one in the village of Pleasant Prairie, County Trunk Highway C project. Mm-hmm. It was on the newspaper. It was on the website, and some of the individuals who have really impacted got direct information. And at the same time, the village also put it on their website.
Yeah.
So we can do a similar thing like that with Randall and Twin Lakes.
Yeah, both of them. Yeah, Randall and Twin Lakes. Okay, thank you.
And if it means possibly especially those around that vicinity, if it means giving them paper notice, we can do that too as well.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming. All right, we'll begin. This evening we'll begin with Mike, facility.
Okay. Two projects that are ongoing. First one is the KCC chiller replacement out here. That project is on schedule and it's continuing to proceed as expected. The other project is the planning development remodeling project. Everything is pretty much done on that except for furniture installs and moving the staff in. So furniture installs are going to happen the 14th, and then the following week we'll move the staff. And that project should be buttoned up. Those are the two ongoing projects. I didn't include a focus on energy spreadsheet this time because there were no changes. So going forward, when there's no changes, you won't see that spreadsheet. There's not been a lot of activity with that. Most of the activity that we're reporting on now is LED related. HVAC side, there isn't a lot happening anymore. The rebates from focus on energy just aren't there unless you're really making a big change from a one-for-one type situation. So we rarely do that. So from now on, if you see a spreadsheet, it means there's some changes, and then we'll talk about it. If there isn't one, then there is nothing.
Okay.
That's all I have.
Thank you, Mike. Frank, are you set?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. Anderson Art Center Preservation Project, HVAC starts complete. Punch list is complete now, so we're going to go to full commissioning phase on that. HVAC training is going to be forthcoming. Landscaping is going to be done in the spring. It's the fall, winter came early. And they scheduled a grand opening with a new art exhibit for February 22nd. No questions, we'll go on in the ceremonial courtroom. It said the architect will compile a report on the scope and estimated cost of restoration. Kenosha County and the architect are exploring sources of public and private grant funding. The investigative benchmarking phase of this project is scheduled to begin on February 17th.
Frank, could you just take a minute or two to explain what the benchmarking phase is?
Sure. The investigative benchmarking phase, they took a general overview of the whole project. You know, if we could move the air conditioning up in the ceiling and remove the ductworks and everything that's there, but then what it would take to fix and repair all of the skylights that they poured cement-like mixture on top of the stained glass skylight so that it can support this type of ceiling. really the destruction they did to the ornamental plaster work and of course the paint too, what it would take to restore all that. But nobody's ever had to try to take cement off of stained glass before. All of the architects, engineers, all the restoration people, they reached all over the country. Nobody's done it. Nobody's had to do it. So that was a kind of a big unknown that they put a cost there that really, you know, it's really kind of fuzzy, and along with what it's going to take to repair the plaster work in all these different areas because it's pretty intricate, and the painting, things like that. So what was proposed and what was passed was, after talking to the architects, you know, how can we really get a good handle on what it's going to cost to do this? They said, if we did a very small area, I think it's like 7% of the entire ceiling, just those particular areas, piece of the skylight, piece of the pieces of the ornamental plaster and the painting, things like that, just those specific areas, small percentage, and what it would take to, again, try to get the cement off the skylight, or if it can't be taken off, what it would take to do it new, or repair this plaster work using the techniques, you know, because this goes back to the 1920s, so that it would all blend in correctly once it's done. Investigate exactly what it'll take to do that, and then we would get very good numbers for those to restore those pieces, and from that we can then apply those numbers to the full project so that the project numbers get really precise.
Yes. Question I have is obviously gobs of lead paint are used in that. So more than likely, isolate the room, seal it off. We're going to have problems shutting down the courtroom because of the removal. I mean, has that been looked into as part of the rehabilitation of this?
Yeah, the courtroom proper will be shut off and shut down and isolated.
But obviously, you know, however they have to seal out the room, but also seal off HVAC from the rest of the building, all that stuff. That everything outside, because you can't have it, you know, traveling outside either.
Yeah, they've got to take the, it's not just going to be a dumpster outside.
No.
Yeah. So they've taken that into account for their.
Okay, so that's been,
that's part of it.
Again, it's a big concern, I know, when we start getting into
the work. I just want to clarify, because Frank, have they identified that there is lead in that paint?
They haven't.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure that it could be, but they haven't.
They use paint 1978 and older, there's lead. That's just the way it is.
These things are, like you say, I know what that'll be part of the process.
Right. Okay. But it hasn't been, you haven't gotten that far yet.
No, but they're preparing for all this.
Basically, what this benchmarking is letting everyone, including the people that are going to potentially bid on this, know what they're getting into.
Yeah. Takes a lot of the guesswork out of it, so we hope we'll get those.
How exactly do they remove cement from glass without moving or hurting the glass?
That's
very carefully.
That's part of the unknown.
Cement remover.
Yeah, they're actually going to take a piece. They're going to take a piece of it out, take it back to the shop, and try different methods and see what will work. And for that, they can document what does work, and then they'll know through those processes what it takes for sections of it, and then you can extrapolate that to the full size and know what it'll take.
Talking about intricate surgery.
Maybe, yes. In the end, you know, if it's the National Park Service, the state, everybody like us to keep the original glass. So that's something we gotta look at what point do you stop trying to save the original glass and go to new. But that's part of this process to
get it sorted out now.
Do it at a very small piece, and that sort it out now exactly, so that nobody's guessing. You know, boy, what does it take to take this off? That nobody knows. So that you bring it down. Yes, this is how you take it off. This is the process that works. These are the results that you'll end up with. So that, you know, when we do the project, that they have to match these same results.
Is Avatron still in town? Mm-hmm.
Actually, Ray had reached out.
Yeah, I made contact with the owners over there, and she's not actively involved right now, but she's aware of the situation. She actually gave us a lead on a potential grantee down in the Chicago area.
I think John passed away, right?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the wife was running.
What's her name?
I'm blocking on it right now, but yeah.
Oh, I've known him for years because he's with Mr. Restoration.
Right, yeah. Right. And they have products, yes. And our architect has actually worked with their products, and yeah, they've got an international reputation.
Yeah.
We're fortunate to have them in the community.
Right. Thank you, Frank. You got a couple more.
Yeah, Joint Services, Evidence Area Restoration. We're assisting Joint Services with the design of the Evidence Area renovation project. The cooler freezer bids part of that project came in on January 7th and appear to be within budget. We actually started construction on June 6th, and we're scheduling substantial completion for August.
January 6th.
Pardon me?
January 6th.
I'm sorry, January 6th. What did I say?
June.
Yeah,
we're
no,
sorry. Don't sell yourself short.
I'm trying to move
it.
No. Yeah, we did. January 6th, sorry. Substantial, that'd be quick. June to August. District Attorney, juvenile intake renovation is the next project we've got going. We're just trying to get the drawings finalized with the different customers and to draw up specs. We'd like to go out to bid at the end of February for that, and we're targeting substantial completion for August. That's it.
Any questions for Frank? Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Starting before, if we have two resolutions in front of you today, and these are resolutions that we had initially approved in this committee and all the way to the county board, but unfortunately at the railroad commissioner's office they wanted us to tweak some of the languages, and so that's what we did. So this is just to repair a resolution to repair the railroad crossings on E just west of 32, and on L, just east of EA. These are all in the village of Summers. So it's a repetition of what we did last time, apart from the fact that some of the languages have been tweaked. And so we're presenting it for you for your review and approval.
So I wanted to give a little additional context. Yeah, so I'll give a little context. So We brought the resolutions originally to the committee. I think it was in September is when it was passed. And it was passed by the board actually in September as well. And then we sent the resolutions to the Railroad Commission within the week of them being passed by the board. And then we continued to follow up, I won't say weekly, but I'm going to say monthly, with them like, okay, what's going on? You know, have you guys started to work with the railroad, the UP, to get things done? And we weren't getting a whole bunch of positive news from them. We'll get to it. Well, then all of a sudden in December, right before the holidays, it's like, oh well, those resolutions aren't quite right. Really? Okay, what's wrong? Because we did them exactly the same way as two previous. We used the exact same language that we had in two previous resolutions that were fine. And they said, well, we've got this new template. Okay, get us the new template. I actually had the county executive talk to a couple of the legislators. I can't remember if he talked to Samantha Kirkman, Tip McGuire, those two for sure, and maybe even Wirch. And they tried to put pressure on the, because it just seemed like it was a bureaucratic, okay, what an excuse not to actually do. At the end of the day, we're making the railroad aware of they have an issue with their asset that poses a danger to the motoring public. Fix it. That's the point of this thing. Somehow that gets lost in this. So the elected officials dug into it, and they all came back and said, you guys are going to have to do the new resolutions. So we said, okay, fine. So we took the exact template, and I said, this was only like 2 weeks ago.
Right.
And I said, okay, before we bring this through the committees and jump through the hoops again, go back to them, and I want to make sure. I know we use the exact template that they told us to use. Go back to them and make sure they sign off on it. Glenn from our office had to go back three times, even though he used the exact template, she was still making little changes on this and that. The changes are, I'm going to say, nearly immaterial in my view, as far as what's required. I actually, if you look at the paragraph, the first on the one for Highway E, on the last whereas, so 1, 2, 3, 4, the fifth whereas, that we added, that's new, that wasn't in the first one. So Kenosha County requires the Union Pacific Railroad to pave, plank, repair, blah, blah, blah. That's new. And in the next, now therefore be it resolved, the last sentence in there, the words describing crossing County Highway E, the ID number, that was all that stuff was in the original resolution. All the location, everything was in the original resolution. But crossing County Highway E with tracks of the UP in the town of Summers, that was added. And Clement, this actually, this as far as the location goes, I triple checked this because I know this was brought up on the board floor about the town and the village. This one is goofy because literally the town and village line bisects not quite on the center line of the road as it goes over the railroad, but it's pretty darn close. And where the actual panel is loose, about two-thirds of the panel is in the town, and we're talking a four-foot panel. It is in the town. So the thing that actually is, when you really get down to like breaking out your micrometer and measuring this, it's in the town. So this is still okay the way this one's written.
Okay.
So it was a legitimate concern, because I know you had a concern about it, but I triple-checked it. Okay. And that's literally, so it is in the town, but I can see where, because literally the parcel, you go north, over the center line, and that's in the village, the railroad plat that they own, and then you go south of the center line, and that plat of the railroad is in the town. So,
sure you shouldn't put them both in?
Well, we could, to be safe. Yeah. That would be an okay thing to do, as long as it wouldn't confuse I think we should go with the town, because I looked at it, and I... because if we throw that in now, they may say, well, you guys got to pick one or the other.
Yeah.
One or the other.
Motion to approve both resolutions.
Yeah. Right.
Moving and seconded to approve. Any further discussion? Reading governor?
Aye.
Committee?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you, Clement. We'll sign and we'll take them to the county board.
Okay. Mm-hmm. For the monthly report, we continue to monitor the weather. January, we had a limited number of major storms and ice events. When the conditions were conducive, we carried out our routine maintenance, which includes crack sealing, brushing, shouldering, pavement patching, and trash pickup, just to name a few. And then the other thing we wanted to talk about was the County Trunk Highway W closure. The board resolved on January 21st to bond an additional $300,000 for the repair of the immediate section. And right, while we were doing that, we were also gearing up and getting the consultant ready to do the design, and the project will be advertised. The project was actually advertised January 30th, and the bid openings are scheduled for February 13th, 2020. The construction is expected to start early March, and then after this. In the 2021 budget, we plan to propose in the budget a project to perform an intensive study along that bank of Highway W along the Fox River to develop the most cost-effective and I would say durable repair methods that we're going to apply along that stretch of the remaining 1,200 feet of the embankment that is endangered by floodplain. by the flooding of the river. Other project, County Trunk Highway C, we had our public information meeting on January 29th. In this meeting, we actually introduced the project to the locals or to the residents, and we explained to them how the project will impact them during construction. The project is actually scheduled to start next week, Monday, on February 10th. And the County Trunk Highway C is expected to be closed for 8 weeks during construction. And the 8 weeks, the reason why we are closing it is because of the cranes and the construction equipment are so huge. And so they'll be staging the construction equipment on the road. And so it will not be safe for driving through that work zone, because you have to do flagging, and just the maneuvering of those equipment makes it very unsafe. So the road will be closed throughout during the time that they'll be installing the piling and the bridge itself and the boardwalk.
So it's from Bain Station Road, they'll be closed west to River Road, is that what it is?
Yeah, it will be closed? Yes, it will be closed, but the hard closure will actually be around the bridge. And then between the bridge and Bain Station, okay, and the bridge and River Road, you have what you call a soft closure so that the residents can have access to their property.
Okay. All right, thank you.
And I would just like to say, I attended that meeting, mm-hmm, and it was very nice to see the county and the municipality work together. That was one of the very few PIMs that I've attended where the residents, their concerns were addressed that night, and there was a lot of good discussion. And when everyone left, they were happy with the project because everything was answered. K&L Engineering did a great job on their presentation. Clement did a great job talking with residents and some of their concerns. And the closures, most of them are happy about it because it's going to stop a lot of traffic on Highway C because of all the traffic that's going there right now. And everyone's in favor of this bridge going in to make that loop so they can bike to Prairie Trails and Pleasant Prairie Park and get back around. So it's going to be a nice project.
Actually, how long a distance is the...
It's about a mile.
About a mile?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, if everything goes well, construction will be completed sometime at the end of June. Brookside Parking Lot Access Safety Improvement Project. The county held a pre-award meeting with A.W. Oaks, which A.W. Oaks is a contractor, and we worked jointly to reduce about $55,000 from the overall project cost through valued engineering. A pre-construction meeting with Oaks Brookside Highway Division staff will be scheduled in February, that is this month, to discuss and plan for project activities that balance construction efficiency with staff, customer, emergency service access to the facility for the duration of the project. The project is scheduled to start in early spring, and completion is targeted at the end of October. County Trunk Highway S, the project was advertised on January 6th. Bids are scheduled to be open on February 11th. Right-of-way acquisition is almost complete. The county will be acquiring the last property on February 10th through an award or through eminent domain. But we are likely to have post-acquisition legal issues. What these issues are is that they can always file a claim, and that would be a legal back and forth, but we will own the property still on February 10th. Construction is still scheduled to start in the spring or summer of 2020. Phase two, the right-of-way acquisition, is substantially complete. Three more properties continue to pose legal issues. Two of the properties will be acquired through eminent domain on the 12th of February. Though there will also be some post-acquisition legal issues. Demolition of acquired buildings also continues and is targeted for completion by the end of maybe March or February. They said February, but it could be in March. We formally applied for a grant. We mentioned this last time, and for this phase of the project, through the DOT 75 million multi-local supplement program. Disappointedly, there were too many applications. We were told about 1,600 applications statewide. That total roughly $1.4 billion, and only, I think, about $75 million dollars is available.
So that's a typo, the million on that.
Yes, it's,
that's it's
a billion, $1.4 billion. Yeah. The good thing is that our project aligns extremely well with the grants program's goals, but obviously the competition will be very intense. The grants of selection results are expected by the end of February, after which the county will advertise the project. We are targeting to start construction by mid or late 2020. County Trunk Highway F, as I earlier explained, right-of-way acquisition is complete. Demolition of acquired buildings is on target for to be completed by the end of February. Bid advertisement is scheduled for March 2020, and bid opening date is set for April 14th. Construction starts by June of 2020. Five of the six MOUs with affected property owners have been agreed to and signed. We will be providing additional information to the town of Randall and the village of Twin Lakes to clarify questions regarding post-project jurisdictional transfer. After that, we believe all the municipalities' questions will have been addressed, and they will be able to begin their formal approval process. Or processes. Following town and village approval, the IGA will then begin the formal adoption process by the county board. County Trunk Highway K, the design is complete. However, the design continues to work with FEMA to review and approve the new floodplain impacts resulting from the relocation of the Pike Creek. Right-of-way acquisition continues with completion scheduled for March. This results in a schedule of utility relocation completion utility relocation in June. The reason being that one of the reasons too is that we have a lot of utility relocation in County Trunk Highway S, and they're using the same subcontractors to do those projects. And so they're also focusing on S now to complete S, and then they'll get back to County Trunk Highway K. And that works well with us because we are still continuing the right-of-way acquisition. The city and the county began to investigate the possibility of jointly applying for surface transportation program funding for this project through the DOT. We also continue to discuss the project stormwater utility specifics as far as this project is concerned. Foxconn and DOT related projects, County Trunk Highway KR enhancement project, the section between I-94 to County Trunk Highway H. The road is completely open to traffic. All paving work is completed, and right now they're doing just landscaping and installation of some utility, I think gas main. I drove by this afternoon, and there are a lot of activities occurring on the shoulders. But the main road is, the main trunk of the road is completed and open to traffic. From time to time, the outside lanes are closed for construction purposes for the installation of the utility. The section of County Trunk Highway K between H and 31, the design continues, and the design team is just fine-tuning the design and working with all the local residents to make sure that all their issues are being addressed in the design. Again, the construction is still targeting to begin in the fall of 2020. Miscellaneous projects. Last year, we made mention of the Lakeshore Lateral Gas Main Project by We Energy that extends from Whitewater in Walworth County to town of Parrish in Kenosha County. I think I also sent out the map of the two routes that the We Energy is proposing. They have not made a decision of which route they're going to, they've not made any decision which route they're going to take or select. We got notice for a public hearing that is scheduled for February 26th at 2 p.m. from 2 p.m. to 6 p.m. in the Liberty Hall Parkside Room in Echo Park in Milwaukee. In Burlington, Washington, Wisconsin, sorry. If approved, construction of this project is scheduled to begin in the late of 2020, and they're shooting to complete the project in 2021. And that's all I have for this report.
Anything else for comment? All right, thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Previously, I sent around attachments for the Kemper Center shoreline damage that occurred back on the 11th of January. I'm sure most of you have either seen that yourself driving through Kemper Center, seen it on the news, Kenosha newspaper, but it's been a lot of places just because anyone that you talk to as far as locals never seen it as bad as this last storm. And not only we always report on the shoreline issues, and we've been doing our design and engineering for over a year now to make sure that we're ready for grant opportunities. We never knew that we'd be gearing up for an opportunity with FEMA potentially, but that's where we stand right now, that people that lived down there for over 25 years said they'd never seen the debris throw as far as it had. And even the multi-use path, approximately 500 linear feet of path, some places are just missing, completely gone. Lake Michigan ate it. And other places just severely eroded underneath, making it for safety issues for the normal public to even be walking down there. So immediately after the storm that weekend, we went down there and did safety-related reconnaissance, making sure that it was safe to the general public, cleaning off parking lots, creating debris piles until we can truck those out. But the main thing that we're going to be doing is tomorrow meeting with FEMA. It's going to be three different counties have claimed disaster relief, and then it goes to the state. So Kenosha, Racine, and Milwaukee counties. Each county separately meets with FEMA and their representatives, so we're going to have our own FEMA agent tomorrow go through, and not only for Kenosha County, more specifically Kemper Center, but the city of Kenosha has made claims, and two smaller scales, very small, Pleasant Prairie and the Village of Summers. Village of Summers, it's more private property, and they're not recognizing that at this point. This is a meeting more for municipalities and our claims, just to be clear on that one. So we put together our reports, pictures. It was great that we had design and engineering plans ready, like I said. So working with Baird Engineers, I was able to say, okay, this specifically was the area that got the most substantial damage. And what FEMA wants is more so to put it back to the original state prior to the storm conditions. So they don't worry too much about enhancements or what you want. It's more about getting Humpty Dumpty back together again. So with that, we were able to design more specifically to put it back to pre-storm conditions. But as we all know, that's not sufficient. That's why we're doing the coastal shore repairs and doing the engineering work right now. So our main point is to prove to the FEMA folks is that we have sufficient damage to meet certain monetary thresholds for the state. It's a little over $8 million or so needed. So as long as we can prove to that level, then we can go back and forth and have those debates about not needs and wants, but why we have to have this per regulatory authorization. Because we can't just put small little rubble back in there and expect it to stay in place, nor would the Army Corps engineers allow us to do that. So we're going in hoping that FEMA understands us on multiple levels, and then by the next committee meeting, hopefully we have good news that FEMA's supporting Kemper Center to get it back to a usable condition again. So, any questions on that before I move on?
Go ahead, Mike.
My question is on the long-term fix. Is there a plan for a long-term fix that, or are we still developing that?
We're substantially complete with our long-term plan. The design.
Let's get rid of all the rubble out of there. I mean, you know, put a seawall out there. I have no idea, but it's somehow preventing.
Yes, we have that plan in hand. We're going through the permits right now. Before this even happened, we were going to the Army Corps of Engineers and the DNR. So we're already going through that process.
Is there grant money for that?
Not really. And that's why you saw in the city, if you saw Anthony Raymond's quote, the mayor, he says, we've been asking for this for years, and it's been on the shoulders of all the taxpayers in the city of Kenosha to do all this revetment work. Because I believe that they are trying those avenues, and we still will try wherever we can. But this might be one of our opportunities to get this done without just on the backs of just our local tax dollars.
Yeah, and I'm just thinking, okay, so 17, 19, 3 years, what's that costing? You know, is it going to be every year, every other year again, every 3 years? You know, it's out of our control, obviously.
Right. Yeah.
So
But with the high lake levels and the storms, tomorrow, it'll be interesting that we're going to be down there, and they're predicting northeastern winds that are going to do maybe the same thing that just happened. I don't know how I feel about that, but if they see that personally, it just goes to show that it doesn't take much.
And we've talked in prep for this meeting tomorrow that, so FEMA historically has taken the approach of what exactly Matt laid out. They come in, they have to make sure that the damage that's occurred meets certain thresholds, and that's the first bar you got to jump over, which, based on what we know at this point, it seems pretty solid that we're going to meet those thresholds. But then the next level of questions is, okay, so the standard routine has been you replace it and you do the same thing that was there before. Right. But they've learned, and this is, we're hopeful that FEMA has gotten a little more practical, because there was a thing on 60 Minutes about 6 months ago where on the East Coast, you know, they've done the same repairs three times in 5 years.
No improvement.
And then finally somebody says, you know, maybe we should actually do something different here. And so FEMA's actually stepped up to the plate out there and now funded some of the stuff that now is going to prevent the damage that's been occurring every so often now. So we're hoping that that's a universal lens that now FEMA's kind of starting to look through. We're going to find out. This is a great opportunity because it makes no sense to do the same thing and restore it to the same conditions so the same thing can happen again. So.
And what was the cost a couple of years ago to get this put back in place? What did it cost us approximately?
As far as Kemper Center to put it?
Well, because this happened, what, 17?
Well, we get these storms, I'll call them, on an annual basis, and debris and rubble comes up.
Some are worse than others.
That's usually in-house, is we just do that.
Yeah,
But there's no real cost other than our trucking costs.
Our time.
So no one's ever documented how much time we're spending down there, the trucking costs, or anything like that?
We could do that, but it'll be fairly small.
But obviously, are we showing it's getting larger and larger and larger? Obviously, costs go up.
Right, but this event kind of blew all those away. Literally, where there was soil to make a path, there's 40 feet that's been gone now, eaten by the lake. And so that's why we're hoping that this will rise to the level that we can actually address it.
So there will be a cost to get this put back in, whereas before we didn't do that.
Correct. We have everything calculated. We have the trail, what that will cost, what the stone revetment in that adjacent area, to what that will cost. We are not asking for the whole entire 1,500 linear feet of Kemper Center. More specifically, where it was washed out and isolated. We don't want to come in asking for too much, and then they start to say, whoa, we're not getting in the business of fixing
it. And it's documented.
Correct.
They'll see the exact sections.
Yeah, and we'll be doing site visits tomorrow, so then they'll physically be able to see this.
Well, I guess what I'm getting at is there's going to be a cost to repair at some time in the future. It's going to happen again if there isn't a permanent fix, if you will. And so when you look at a permanent fix, is going to save us this cost currently and going forward. You know, then you do a cost to benefit type thing that, you know, I think is going to be important moving forward, because again, it's terrible down there. I mean, what was happening down there is just horrendous, you know. And, you know, the people who live down there have to more deal with it than, you know, us folks out here. But it still needs to get taken care of. And I think that's one area of getting people to understand out here. Well, we keep spending money to fix the damn thing. We're going to fix it right, you know, type of thing. And I think that's going to be an easier way of looking at it, you know, for the people who don't see that kind of stuff, don't see it at all.
Absolutely. Well, that's where we've been aiming with this plan, so that it only gets done once. And I know I've been reporting this to the county board, everybody should be aware of it, that we've been doing this so we were shovel ready and first in line and ready to roll. Because no matter where you live, it's a county park. And this is the first time that we're in danger of losing the parking lot. Next from the parking lot is the building. So, yeah, that's the same systematic approach that Ray has taken and Clement with IWW, that we need that long-term one, and we go in there with the right studies and do it properly. So they've been doing a great job.
I'll finish up the rest of the parks report here. Petrifying Springs Park, area number 4, pedestrian bridge. So we have an opportunity to relocate an existing pedestrian bridge off of County Highway KR with that roadway project. And there is a need for numerous reasons to have a different bridge within our park over at Petrifying Springs Park. And that's going to help out with our river restoration project and actually widen the concrete abutments underneath in order to have better hydrology underneath, and also be able to take that playground and in the future be able to take that and take it out of the floodplain and also create more wetland floodplain without us having to do ongoing maintenance every time it floods. That area gets hit pretty bad. Sand goes in the river, just countless hours for our staff. So we are starting the process of design work to take that existing bridge and repurpose it within the park for those reasons. So definitely a win-win. As far as Pringle Nature Center, as always, you can see those attached reports. Kenosha County Veterans Memorial Park Restroom Project, formerly known as the KD Restroom Project. Those bids are out as reported last month, but we did want to extend those. Now they're due on the 20th of this month. There was some legitimate questions as far as understanding the foundation type. And since this was a quarry at one time, you just don't know once you start digging. You have certain assumptions, but for the contractors that are truly bidding on, we wanted to get that out of the way and make sure we do underground boring so they have the geotechnical behind it. So just for to make sure it's a good quality project and no one's concerned, we're just going to push that back to get those reports done in time. As far as park roof replacements, Silver Lake Shelter B, Fox River has 2 restrooms, and Pets Restroom are all slated to be repurposed. This is part of our larger ongoing roof replacement plan. For those committee members that have been around, it's been maybe 5 years in the works that we've been doing scheduled roof replacements throughout all of our county facilities and assets. So that will be due on the 27th of this month. Just want to put this out there, anytime that Dan and I can state that we are in need of seasonal jobs, I wanted to put it formally on the report that we're gearing up. Dan has already done a fantastic job, already hiring people, just trying to get the word out there sooner than later about our seasonal employment, because it's tough, as we all know, with the labor market is still going to be tough to find skilled labor to work even in a seasonal position. So if you know anyone within long term, which means they usually work 9 months out of the year, more of a higher skilled person, short term, college age kid, lifeguards, fee collectors, if you guys know anyone, just pass them directly over to me. We'd love to have them sign up and get an application in and interview them. So that would be appreciated. And that goes for both parks. So out west, Pets, anywhere.
Are we advertising maybe at the schools, the high schools?
Yeah, we're doing something more unique over at Central High School. We're trying it out for the first time, that we're our HR and our park superintendent, and even our foreman that has been a coach with some of these kids, we're going there during their lunch hours first and just letting them know that we have job opportunities for them. And then we're coming back a week later. We're telling them we're coming back and we're doing interviews on the lunch hour for these kids so they can fill out their application online. They fill it out. We'll interview them right at school, and then you're guaranteed a job. So we're going to try to make it as easy as possible. That's where we'll go next. Our superintendent is making contacts more out west. It's just central. High school is more central to Silver Lake Park, where we have a lot of seasonal, especially lifeguards. So we wanted to start there and see how successful this is, and maybe we'll learn something along the way. So anything we can do to make a turnkey for these kids, I think that's what we're learning. Mm-hmm. We've got to simplify the process for them.
Dan?
Matt, are all those jobs posted on the county's website here already or not?
I asked HR to do it by the first week of February, so it should be this week to have that all posted.
Okay, super.
So if someone doesn't see it for some reason, we'll check on it just to make sure it happens. But that's the ultimate goal, is to have it done by the end of this week.
Okay. Also, I think that's a really innovative idea to partner with the schools like that, so I hope that goes well.
Yeah, me too. Thank you. As far as summer programs and events, Gruber Law Offices came in again. That they just keep on wanting to partner with the parks, especially getting their word of mouth out there as far as their firm. So they upped the ante to 6,000 this year, just trying to put their word out with all of our events. And we can't do it without their help. So it just pays, just so we have no cost on to the taxpayers for the movie nights or other special events. So we really appreciate that. And a lot of our corporate partners that we have on an annual basis. But Gruber came in early this year, so I just wanted to put that on there. And with it, we are doing a new concert series at Bristol Woods Park because of that partnership. So every Wednesday for a two-month period, we're going to utilize, it was an Eagle Scout band shelter. And now that we have so many different activities between Pringle Nature Center, they want to cross-promote what they do, Boundless Adventures. It makes sense to just have different types of activities and utilize that park a little bit more. So that's helping pay for that. And Wendy, I think, came out with the official name.
Today.
I think so. Let's go with it. What is it?
Bristol Woodstock.
There we go. So I think we're going to go with that one. Other than that, Yoga Tree Wellness, they helped us out at Old Settlers Park and now are going for a boot camp fitness program over at Pets Park. And then, like I said before, just continuing to work with our corporate sponsors to be creative on offering free activities for all of our constituents. On that, just one more run walk happening on the 23rd. So, as Supervisor Ellerman and Chairman said, it doesn't stop in winter. We always have something going on all year. That's all I have.
Thank you, Matt.
Since we all know we're in Kenosha County, why don't we just call it Veterans Park? You don't call Kenosha County Petrified Springs Park, Kenosha County, right?
I think the reason behind it is there are a lot of veterans parks, and we still want to be able to let the community know that this one's for all veterans, and it's going to be a little bit more unique, that we want to make sure it's all-encompassing. So since there are a lot of other veterans parks that maybe do a certain thing to serve a certain maybe branch of the military or that.
Understood. Or but we don't discuss it.
What's that?
We don't discuss all those other parks. We discuss this park in this meeting, right? But
yeah.
Same, there's only one veterans park.
Right.
That we're discussing, right?
But this is a public document anyway, so I just like to be formal through the process.
Anything else from Matt?
Okay. Thank you, sir. We're finalizing our 2020 business plan. It contains a range of initiatives designed to provide a framework for our continued success. In your packet, we included the proposed.
Did you want to do the rates first? Because that's not on the agenda.
Okay. Proposed 2020 peak daily season fees and pass holder rates. So those are attached for your approval. So that's part of our business initiative. And if we're not asking for any changes from last year, we did add the Wisconsin sales tax last year. We feel that that helped with, you know, us being successful last year in lieu of all the weather problems that we had. So we are looking just to maintain both season pass rates the way that they were and all of our daily fees the way that they were last year. So if you have any questions on any of the rates?
This is more of a formality. It does not go before the county board. Normally, this committee approves the rates, and last year we had a major change with the sales tax, and it was accepted, and it didn't affect people mentally. Like, some people were concerned that it was something that people are used to paying everywhere at work. So here, Dan is recommending that we don't change a thing, so we won't be raising anything, lower anything. But the formality of it is normally this committee at this meeting would just approve this.
So just in terms of that sales tax, I mean, would you say that it follows the sales tax of being a 5.5% benefit to Kenosha County Golf by doing it that way? You
correct.
Comment upon that, or?
Yep. The only consternation that we had was, you know, when it came to $5.28 for our members' guest fees, instead of having a rounded number, they would always say, why don't you just make it $5.30 or $5.50 or something instead.
Other than that,
there was no other complaints about having to add the tax last year.
So we didn't have any key change until we'd be able to
right.
I'd look for someone to
make
a motion.
Yeah.
Or second.
The motion has been made effective to approve the 2020 rates presented by the Dan and staff. All those in favor, raise the governor.
Aye.
Ready?
Aye.
Thank you. We made the decision to begin our staff recruitment, as Matt had mentioned, early this year. We did do some resume review, and we did schedule some interviews, and the first round of interviews went really, really well. I mean, I think we interviewed seven people, and we made an offer to all seven of them. You know, they were all, you know, good quality candidates. I went all the way back to last September when people had applied, hopefully that they'll hang on and come to work for us, you know, in March and April when we get up and rolling. But we are looking for at least 30 new employees this year, so that's a dent, but it's not everything that we need. And I just checked today, and there's about six more people that have applied since, you know. So we're excited, and we'll be doing another round of interviews in February, and then again in March until we hire the people that we need. So the golf shows are coming up. The Chicago Golf Show will be February 28th through March 1st, and the Milwaukee Golf Show will be March 13th through the 15th. This really provides us good recognition with local golfers. It really is a great sense of pride for me, because we get to go there and blow our horn a little bit and get everybody to get excited about the season, and it really provides a lot of positive feedback for us. So that's great. Looking forward to that. We continue to work on rebooking our past outings and recruiting new outings for 2020. Petrifying Springs is full with afternoon leagues, and Brightondale is booking up, but we still do have some room to accommodate even more leagues at Brightondale. So really excited about having that many league members again at Petrifying Springs. And then we're having a productive off season, booking group events, restocking the golf shop, tuning up all the equipment, freshening up the clubhouses, and getting ready for our 2020 season. The indoor golf simulator has been up and running since December 1st or so. We've had some customer participation. It is working in conjunction with our holiday sale, and it's really a good time. I mean, there's a lot of people that enjoy it. I've talked to several, and I've asked them to compare our facility to other facilities around, and they really spoke positively of what we have to offer. They really like the flight scope. They think it's very accurate. With our system, you don't do any putting, and so it's a lot quicker. You're able to get 18 holes in, you know, like one person can play 18 in an hour, two people can play 18 in 2 hours, you know, so it depends on how many people that are coming to use the simulator, how quickly that you get to play. It's really accurate for the driving range, I mean, for lessons and club fitting. It really gives you good information, so it's working really well. We just have to get more participation, and I think, you know, by promoting it for all golf season and then especially in the fall, we'll have that more participation next year.
With all the rain we got, you might want to make sure they know you have one.
Right, yeah. Yeah. And then, the projects that we're doing is refreshing the clubhouses and ordering all of our supplies, equipment, and merchandise, really getting some good help from the facilities again. Tim Catt, our special project manager, is out there and really did some special things with our two screen porches, our patios out at Petrifying Springs. He put a clear coat on the brick. It really looks nice, and put a metallic epoxy around the edges, and it really makes it pop. I'm excited for people to see it, so it'll be a good addition.
Maybe a couple months.
Right.
Sometimes less.
Right. Yeah, the earliest we've ever opened was March 6th.
March 3rd is the earliest I ever started. And didn't stop. It happens.
We're due. We're really due.
Yeah. We always shoot for opening of the greens on St. Paddy's Day, so let's see what happens.
I hope you do. Great.
Sure. Yeah, pretty much you've heard, you know, with the exception of the storm we had on the 11th and 12th and the impact on the lakefront, the weather was pretty mild in January, so there was more of an emphasis. All of the divisions were able to focus on more maintenance projects as opposed to fighting storms projects, which is good. With regard to the Simulcast project, we've got everything pretty well prepared for the Silver Lake Park Tower to begin construction in March. PSB Vicinity Tower, that we finished the demo specs. The demo specs went out for bid actually on the 29th last week. The walkthrough is scheduled for potential contractors. The five houses, we're basically looking at the five houses on that block and the old daycare center as an ad alternate, depending if we got enough money in the budget. We'd like to take and clean the whole block off. We don't need to put the tower up, but we'd like to clean that whole thing off, and then we'd have the table set for whatever the future holds. So the bids will probably close, I think they close a week later, so it's the third week in February. Started the rezoning and conditional use permit process with the city. We have to get them a little bit more information based on their initial review. I'm hoping that this will be a more linear process than some of the things we've had in the past. I know that the new city administrators worked real closely with the development department to improve some of the processes, so this will actually be kind of a good experience to see how some of those new initiatives are going to work. So we're targeting June to actually begin construction on the tower downtown. We're also going to be starting the master planning processes for both the job center as well as the civic center in February. And just really working to continue to finalize scheduling for any of the remaining 20 projects, 20 budget year projects that we haven't started yet, but we've got pretty much all the divisions are off and running and have things pretty well lined up. In January, we got everything pretty well set and ready to go. So hopefully the weather will cooperate this summer for Dan, Matt, and all the projects that we've got that are outside projects. We'll see.
Question, did Thielen get that testing done on the county's pit?
Yeah, so Thielen did soil borings in pretty much throughout the whole pit, and they've identified a strip that looks like it has real good potential, and then there's other areas that might have potential. We just had a conversation with them today. They're supposed to come out on site. We're going to try to get a meeting set up for next Monday or Tuesday to kind of take it to the next level. At this point, basically, we're trying to just identify if everybody's in agreement. This makes a lot of sense because basically for those that don't know, for Thielen, they own the land directly that abuts our old, what's that?
All around it.
Pretty much, north of it, south of it. The land that they've got right to the south that abuts our old gravel pit. Our old gravel pit, highway gravel pit, which the county's had for, I don't even know, decades. I know, a long time. It was considered dead, it was pretty much depleted, but now with some of the new technology that Thielen has, they're able to take this and well, they've done an analysis, and there's at least 800,000 cubic yards in the one section that they've checked that is definitely mineable and makes economic sense for them, because they're going to have a conveyor that's going to be literally right there. And so we're having conversations with them to see just what we need to do to bolt this together, because everybody agrees it's a good thing. It would be a good thing for the community, especially if we can come up with a restoration plan, which they've been...
Which should include it with the restoration of what they got right next to that.
Right, yeah. So we just literally had a meeting this morning, Andy and I, 10:30, and then we're going to work to schedule a follow-up on-site that Matt's going to be a part of next Monday or Tuesday is what we're trying to do.
Good. Thanks for that saying.
It's good.
That's it, huh?
That's pretty much it.
Motion.
Motion.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you all very much.